I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Just another manic Monday, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. A huge win for Arsenal and goals galore at St James's and the Bridge. It's Monday 5th of Feb. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
Tell you what a weekend.
Yeah.
What a weekend.
Incredible.
So much. So much Barclays.
I know. Yeah. Fulham got a point on the road.
So much. It was to that one, eh? Yeah, well, so much Barclays. I had that over an extra credit card I didn't want. Look where it came from.
But you maxed it out already, baby.
That's how they get you.
Indeed, indeed. The sort of, I don't know, mixed emotions about this. It's Sven-Göran Eriksson's birthday today.
Oh. Yeah, and how did the dressing up as Marilyn Monroe go for this year? For you?
It was a great time. It's also Carlos Tevez' birthday.
Is it really?
How did dressing up like Marilyn Monroe go for you?
Oh dear, very different men.
Yeah, I was apprehended by security.
You didn't get into that one.
I think Carlos Tevez is very much his own security.
Well, yeah.
Which is fair.
I've had a rough weekend.
But yeah. All the best to Sven, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Every day's a gift for the man.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, good stuff.
Let's get into our highlights of the weekend. There were so many, quite frankly. Luke Moore, what are you going to begin with?
I'm going to go with South Africa goalkeeper Ronwyn Williams.
Love that.
In his performance in the quarterfinal shootout in the Africa Cup of Nations, got the Man of the Match award as well, I think. Incredible performance by him, and particularly in that shootout. Saved a penalty from Bebe.
He did.
And another amazing save from a player whose name escapes me, but it was...
Got close to the one that went in.
He did.
He nearly kept a clean sheet in a penalty shootout.
Yeah, exactly. It was incredible.
I first of all thought that. There's three things. First of all, I thought, almost kept the clean sheet in a penalty shootout. Second one is one of his teammates said that he should instantly be made the Minister of Finance because he could save South Africa's economy. And the third one, I thought, is there anything that ex-Archbishop of Canterbury can't do?
Well, do you know what? I wondered which Williams you were going to go with, actually. You had a choice of a few.
Well, Rob was very close to Rowan, so I could have gone Robbie Williams, but Pete's not here, so wasted point.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. No, our resident fan of Robbie's not here.
But it was a crazy, crazy good performance from the penalty shootout. As you said, said to me, Marcus, like 2-1 in the penalty shootout is remarkable stuff, really.
And it's fitting for what has been an absolutely brilliant tournament, isn't it?
It's been great.
It
is, Jim, your highlight of the weekend.
So I'm going to go for Rasmus Højlund's 21st birthday because it was an eventful one for him as well. Okay. Obviously, he scored another goal. He's starting to bed in a little bit. Mm. Played his leg like a guitar for the celebration.
Yeah.
But after Alexander Garnacho's goal, Højlund gave him just the most delicate little peck on the cheek. And in the post-match, he had his arm around him. And they're sort of quite tactile with each other in a really sweet, unguarded way, which is something you don't really see from footballers in the sort of hyper-masculine world of football very often.
Since Gary Kelly and Ian Hart.
Indeed.
Was it Gary Kelly and Ian Hart?
Yeah. Oh, you're testing me
there. Neville and Scholes?
Yeah.
They gave each other a little kiss, didn't they, once as well?
We wouldn't want Neville and Neville.
No.
We wouldn't want that.
No. But when I saw...
Dyer and Ali? Was that one?
Yeah, it could have been.
Yeah, they were big mates, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
But it was just, something really sweet about it. And it's very wholesome, and I enjoyed that.
When I saw Rasmus Højlund playing his leg like a guitar at Old Trafford in front of tens of thousands of people, I thought, if that's what cool is now, I'm pleased to be old.
Yeah.
Because it looked ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I love that that's Jim's highlight. I think he's unaware of what happened at the Emirates.
I imagine we'll probably be going into more detail
about that.
We might have time for that. My highlight of the weekend, I'm talking African Cup of Nations, of course. Ivory Coast.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't seen any of this, then press pause now and go and see it and find the highlights. Incredible. And also read Jonathan Wilson's piece in The Guardian. It's a brilliant piece, and it just gives you lovely little nuggets of the sort of recent political history of Ivory Coast and so on. The scenes in that game. It's one of those moments where, when it was unfolding, Ivory Coast, of course, won 2-1 after extra time.
Oh, and that is understating it a bit.
And finished the game with 9 men.
Yeah.
It was incredible. You know, when you watch something, and sometimes you may watch it, I don't know, when it's usually a big World Cup going on or I don't know, maybe a music festival like Glastonbury, and you think it's all going off that I wish I was there. Like that to me is, and that was the thing. When Ivory Coast won, I thought that there right now is the centre of the world.
Yeah.
All of me, all my five, I just want to be there. It's incredible. The fact is that they were 1-0 down and down to 10 men for a lot of the game.
They were down to 10 men before half time.
Yes. And the guy who scores the goal for Mali, his parents are from the Ivory Coast.
So I didn't know that.
He does the apology celebration.
Oh, yeah. Is that why he did it?
And
it
was about that.
A goal worthy of winning any game.
That's the first time I've seen that in international football.
Yeah.
I was like, what's he doing that?
Well, Vish said he wanted to do that in his fantasy football career, that he would play a couple of games for Sri Lanka and then play for England and then score against Sri Lanka and then do this sort of
Because England play Sri Lanka all the time in football.
Well, they would do if Fisher was involved. He's got that amount of power. But anyway, yes, this happened. The apology celebration happened on the international arena, which I can't remember the last time that happened. And then Ivory Coast equalise in the last minute. And they go mad. I think.
And they had every right to go mad.
They did. And I think that there was a moment where everyone thought, you have to play extra time here, lads. And you're down to 10 men. And then they get the winner, which was a lovely goal. Lovely little flick.
And the last kick of the game, I think.
They did have to defend a free kick that was launched into the box. But the guy who scored got sent off for over celebrating. They had the 9 men. I mean, utterly incredible. He won't be able to play in the next round, presumably.
Didn't Fofana in the Ivory Coast goal save a penalty as well?
He did earlier on in the game.
Which it's worth saying. So basically, Ivory Coast went down to 9 men. The goalkeeper had to serve a penalty.
Yeah.
They scored one goal in the 90th minute and one goal in the 121st minute and went through.
Yeah.
After sacking their coach because they almost went out in the group stage
and beaten Egypt as well.
And they're the hosts.
I know we've talked quite a lot already, and we've not got to Arsenal, Liverpool. We've not got there's a lot, but we had to mention that because it was stunning stuff. This tournament has been so good. So that was my highlight of the weekend.
That's good. It's a good highlight. There's a lot packed in.
There's a lot packed in. But let's get to really what Jim's highlight was, and a lot of Arsenal fans as well. Lot of Arsenal fans.
Probably
all of
Arsenal
fans. They beat Liverpool 3-1, of course. It's only Liverpool's second domestic defeat of the season. Your thoughts, Jim?
My thoughts are all very positive. You'd be surprised to hear. I thought the raising of the performance level that was required for Arsenal to win here was executed perfectly. And that's the thing I'm sort of the most impressed by now that dust has settled. Obviously, there was a little period over Christmas where Arsenal lost a couple of games you would otherwise expect them to win, or at least sort of compete in a bit more than they did. And you sort of worry at that point, don't you? You get these little mini crisis points in a season, and everyone was aware, we have to be a lot better than this. And then when Liverpool come to town, you have to be a lot better again. And they did that really, really well. Liverpool had one shot on target. Arsenal controlled the game really, really well, I thought. And it's been a while since there's been a big old Mustafening at the Emirates, really. And the conceding of the silly goal, although a lot of it came from really sort of industrious work from Diaz, it was one of those moments where you think, oh my God, how has this happened?
A ridiculous just goal absolutely, to concede.
Especially the timing of it couldn't have been worse. You put the wind in their sails; they can regroup at halftime, come out and be a lot better. We've seen recently in the FA Cup game at the Emirates that Arsenal didn't take their chances and Liverpool just punished them on the break. It was all set up for that to happen again, and right at the start of the second half as well, Liverpool sort of sliced through Arsenal a couple of times, and we were like, "Oh God, is the pattern going to reemerge? Is this narrative going to happen again?" But they just tightened it up immediately.
There's an element of have you had your chance?
Absolutely, yeah. But they wouldn't allow that to happen, and that's the thing. That's what's different about Arsenal under Arteta in the most part, certainly to a higher level, where they can sort of control their own destiny a lot better than sort of certainly kind of later Wenger teams, and obviously Emery when that fell apart. And that again is what's so impressive about it to me.
They don't let football happen to them, as you often used to say
absolutely.
In the past. Arteta obviously took my advice.
Unlike, what was that?
He played Havertz up top central.
Yeah, you mentioned that on Friday, didn't you?
And Havertz, okay, he missed his one-on-one, but it worked well. And he essentially got Konate sent off for those two bookings.
Yeah.
No, I know.
Well, Konate got Konate sent off.
What I mean by that is
the bustle, right?
Yeah, he beat him twice. Mm. And that was enough. I mean, Konate, we know what a quality centre-half
he
is.
Yeah, he's having a good season. And overall, he's a really good defender. I think actually, really, you could probably say that Gomez made some poor decisions. Van Dijk had a shitty game. Konate did. Alexander-Arnold came back in for Bradley. He's been really impressive. Didn't really do an awful lot. Alisson.
Who's Alisson Becker?
Yeah, Alisson. Obviously,
Colonel Becker.
arguably had two errors. Certainly, the third goal was his error. Possibly the second one as well. He's got to take his fair share of that. But having said all that, Arsenal were still very good. I mean, they were, as Jim said, they were in control of the game. It was a kind of performance that I didn't think, despite the fact they're having a pretty good season, it was a performance that they needed to beat Liverpool, but also at the same time Liverpool had some issues. But I would also say, like, they didn't play like a team who needed really to win that game to stay in touch with the title race, and I thought that part of it was really impressive, the way they went about their business and went about their work. I thought that was very, very good. I enjoyed the game a lot, and I've kind of come away with some mixed emotions, because I partly feel like, okay, that's definitely how Arsenal play, but also they needed two really almost like comical errors from Liverpool to get past them. And it could have been a really frustrating 1-1 in the end. Do you know what I mean?
They conceded from a comical error, though.
But they were forced errors, right? I mean, Martinelli's work in that in the second goal is.
I don't think
is,
the third goal's a forced error.
They're too fortuitous.
You don't think the first goal's a forced error?
The third goal? No.
How so?
I mean, well, Trossard runs through the whole team.
Yeah.
And then Alisson should have basically caught that in his arse cheeks at the near post. And he didn't. But it's not a forced error, is it? The keeper doesn't make a save that he's supposed to make.
But I mean, how is that more of an error? How is it more of an error than more of a sort of Trossard, like, positive action?
I would say, well, I guess maybe we have different definitions.
You could call them fortuitous goals.
Well, what do you think about the third Arsenal? Alisson should save that, shouldn't he?
Well, of course he should save it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but which is, from Arsenal's point of view, it is fortuitous. That there's a slight nick, and in it, Alisson's slightly off, you know, his radar's not quite there, and it goes in.
What I'm arguing, though, is that you make your own luck, right?
I don't think I'm arguing at all. What I'm saying is that there's three goals there, so, you know, we can talk about...
Oh, they deserve the win. They were brilliant.
But Arsenal put themselves in positions where they kept going, and I think that defensively, you know, compare it to the FA Cup match, they defended very, very well, and then they got themselves in positions and they got goals. And the fact is, Martinelli scores the second, so that informs how they then go about their business. And I thought that it was such a huge win for Arsenal. And I thought what was really interesting, and Jim, you were there, so you'll be able to talk about this more. Again, the Emirates seems, dare I even use the word, seems like a fortress these days. Now, I know people who are maybe used to somewhere like Anfield, for example, might go, come on, that's not exactly as raucous as it can be at Anfield. But bearing in mind the stereotype of Arsenal home games, if you like, and be a bit quiet and all that kind of stuff, for me, it comes across on the TV that every challenge is typical. It gets everybody going. And this has not been, this is not new. This has been the case for perhaps a season or two, maybe. Certainly last season.
Certainly for the bigger games, it is the case. There have been a couple of occasions this season where you would, in the games Arsenal are expected to win and then do win. You know, obviously it's not as raucous for, say, Palace or Sheffield United. Yeah,
but that's
it is
inevitable.
For a game like this, absolutely.
Or West Ham at home, which they lost.
But that's also true of Anfield.
Yes, of course. You know,
it's true of any stadium. It's just sort of psychology, isn't it? But yeah, it is a real, real positive now in a case where... Or sort of in contrast to how in the past it can be a bit of a difficult thing where fans get on the team's back because they're frustrated because they've been seeing the same things play out year after year after year. So yeah, it is really refreshing and it is a proper asset as well. I mean, I couldn't really hear the Liverpool fans, and we are down the other end from where they sit, so that's a big part of why. But that was not the case in the FA Cup game, for example.
No, right. And I think as well, the reason why I make that point, and that point has been made, as I say, certainly last year, and so on, but there just seems to be a massive buy-in to what's going on at Arsenal. Has been the case for a little while. And then when people accuse them of maybe over-celebrating, which some of the pundits did. I mean, Carragher wasn't happy that Odegaard was taking photos with the club photographer full-time. There were some other players going...
Carragher took it quite badly overall, actually.
Yeah, I think that there is... there is sometimes an element of saying, oh, you haven't won the league, why are you celebrating like that? And I actually disagree with that.
And you bring it in at the right time there, because I think that is... absolutely part of what you guys are talking about. If you look at the way Arteta celebrates after, I think it's the third guy, goes mental, right? And from other people outside looking in, I don't actually really have an opinion.
Just as well it wasn't VAR.
I don't really care. Well, yeah, I don't really care personally, but the outside looking in there, people are going to go, okay, that's crazy. It's way over the top. And then people look at what Odegaard's doing and flipping the camera around the photographer. It's a bit celebratory. It's like a celebratory atmosphere. Yeah. But what people who criticise that, and I actually think the criticism is fair. I don't care that much about it, but I think it's fair. But what people who criticise are missing is the idea that's exactly why the fans love Arteta. Uh-huh. That's exactly what they want to see from a manager.
That's the buy-in.
Yeah, that's what generates this kind of atmosphere. So the whole thing is linked.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean to say he's immune from criticism. You know, you and I, Luke, certainly stuck the boot in when he was, going on about, writing to Pugmol and all that.
I think
just because somebody does something here doesn't mean to say that you might not you agree with everything they do.
But I think the top managers are all a little bit weird.
Yeah, but in terms of trying to build that atmosphere, trying to the Bayern, and so you remember the Bournemouth game, of course, last season, all that kind of stuff. You know, I go back to when Klopp was first appointed Liverpool manager. You know, they scored a last gasp equaliser at home to West Brom, I think it was, to draw 2-2. Yeah. And Klopp's getting all the players in a row and the arms are going up and so on. Not because it's, isn't it amazing Liverpool have drawn at home with West Brom. It's kind of, right, let's just build on a little something.
Definitely.
You're just trying to do all
platform,
that.
Yeah.
I do think there is an element of that it being from, obviously, Gary Neville has strong opinions on this and Carragher does as well. I think there's a sense of they don't like it that a team that aren't either one of their teams are doing it because they think there's a sort of, it's only authentic when we do this. It's not authentic when anyone else does it. There's sort of
that's quite
being
speculative,
accused.
I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course it's speculative, absolutely. But I think, I find it quite funny that Gary Neville talks about them being a little bit immature when he simply cannot be objective about Liverpool or Arsenal.
Well, Neville was famed for, you'd win a cup final and you'd celebrate and, before the champagne had barely even been poured, Neville's going, right, well, forget about this. We've got, next season we're going. You know, so he would never allow himself to kind of celebrate.
But I also do remember Neville, and I think it might have been West Brom when he was a player, when that something late on happened which generated a positive result for United, and him going up to the home fans at the Hawthorns, like banging his chest and showing his badge and all that kind of stuff.
He used to do that to the Liverpool fans at Old Trafford.
There we go. They all get after it.
This is what I mean when I think for some reason, don't like it that another club are doing it.
Yeah. Well, look, passions run high.
To be fair to Neville, I mean, United did win he won about 8 Premier League.
I think what they're saying is that winning mentality. If you save the celebrations till you actually win something. But anyway, I think we've talked a bit about that. But Arsenal are unbeaten against the big six in the Premier League this season, which is pretty impressive. And as you say, Jim, those games against the big sides, they seem to be much better equipped. They're in the mix. They needed to win this game really to stay in the title hunt. They're 2 points behind Liverpool, are at the top, of course, and Manchester City are the ones who have the games in hand on Arsenal and Liverpool. If they were to win both of those, they would, of course, go top. But I mean, what about Liverpool, Luke?
Yeah,
we've talked pretty glowingly about Liverpool. I'd say more in recent months. Earlier on in the season, we were saying, have they convinced? Are they just good results? But I mean, does this make you change your or any thoughts about Liverpool? Do you think that is it a case of actually if you go at them you can get something?
And I think obviously they're a brilliant team and you can't read too much into one result because Arsenal are also a really good team.
Yeah.
But I did find it interesting that there was just a feeling that, you know, the question I started to ask myself watching the game was, do Liverpool have, without Salah, and obviously Mane's long gone now, Firmino's long gone now, they've lost some midfield players as well, do they have someone who can consistently, you know, pull something out of the bag?
Like a De Bruyne?
I never really felt like, I think Jota's a brilliant forward and a great finisher. I think Gakpo's still kind of finding his feet, but he's obviously a very talented player, but he's pretty anonymous. Diaz can do it, but it's very inconsistent. Nunez can do it, but it's obviously start on the bench, but it's very unpredictable.
Diaz would be the one for me.
There's no way at this point you can look at someone like Luis Diaz and go, he's the guy that's going to get us out of this.
Yeah.
And that game yesterday was a game that needed that because Arsenal were so good.
So would you say Arsenal and Liverpool, in terms of the quality of the squads, I mean, Liverpool have probably got better centre-forwards, but it's not too dissimilar, which because if you look at Manchester City, you think, well, there's Bernardo Silva, there's Kevin De Bruyne, there's Haaland.
But I don't think Man City or Arsenal are in transition at the moment. I think Liverpool are in a transitional phase.
Sure, but right now, do you think that what you're saying is this Liverpool side maybe on paper is not too dissimilar to Arsenal, whereas in previous seasons, you would say that they were better?
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely you would. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, you've got Salah to come back, as you said.
Well, this is the thing, and this is what I would say. So to kind of join together all the things you guys have been talking about, mm-hmm. you know, particularly that key moment where just before half-time, Liverpool equalised from nowhere to make it 1-1. Arsenal, as Jim said, got a lot of time to think about that. The atmosphere in the stadium from the TV seemed to go a bit flat. Oh, God, what's going to happen? If, for example, and it is a big if, but it's not that big an if, mm-hmm. if Mo Salah's playing and 5 minutes after half-time, he does what he does, cuts in off the wide position, gets it on his left and just rifles one in the top corner, yeah. and they find themselves 2-1 down from nowhere, mm-hmm. that is a very disheartening position to be in if you're Arsenal at home, having played so well in the first half. And so these margins do matter. Yeah. And without Salah, they don't really seem to have anyone that could do that at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, it's... I think that's not too unfair there. Liverpool, they are still top of the league, though, of course. But again, Arsenal, Jim, right back in it. And Arsenal, they've arrested that little slump they had. Obviously, they lost at home to West Ham, then they lost to Fulham, lost to Liverpool in the FA Cup. But hammering Palace. Obviously, Palace are not great at the moment. Impressive against Forest, even though it was only 2-1, but still a win's a win's a win. And then now, so how do you feel now with Arsenal? Do you think that, you know, we're into February now and we're getting towards the business end, if you see what I mean. It's business end eve, you might say.
Absolutely. I think the really important thing about this win is essentially, you know, it might sound like a really basic thing to say, but it is to stay in the title race. We don't know who's in a title race until like months and months and months into the season, unless it's really obvious from the get-go that someone's just eating up points. And there was always a danger that it was going to be, you know, two steps forward, one step back after the sort of the relative successes of last season. And it's very important for Arsenal to stay in the hunt and stay amongst that. And that if they do regress in some way, which is understandable and very, very possible, especially with a couple of key players missing, you wouldn't really have been expecting to be without Timber for most of the season. You'd probably expect to be without Partey for some of the season, but he's essentially not been involved at all.
But when Jorginho's stepping up, though,
he had an absolutely fantastic game. But yeah, it's very impressive that they're staying in the hunt, and you've got to make it a three-way race. And it's important to remember as well that City have got two games in hand, and if they win them, they're top.
Yeah,
in what feels like a tale as old as time.
Quite a point, yeah.
But it's still in touching distance.
But that's what it's about.
Yeah, you've got to stay in there.
It feels important. And I think the experiences of last season will keep them fighting and keep them sort of engaging the mentality they need to get into games like this.
Yeah, and there's no point having last season's experience if you're not going to grow from that.
Well, exactly. And secondly, I think they have.
I think they have too, but we'll obviously see the proof of the pudding will be in the eating. The Jorginho point is very quickly, we can't let it go without him being mentioned. I think it's perfect, that kind of game for him, because he's so calm and so at a level every single game that what that tends to manifest itself as, if you have to play him against a team that you should beat at home, people start to go, oh yeah, but he's slowing it down and the tempo's not there. Actually, when the game goes faster than him, like that kind of game, he stays where he is and he can almost conduct. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's been relied upon at international level, why he's done what he's done in his career, because he's able to keep a calm head among all that stuff. And I just thought he was absolutely brilliant. I actually think Martinelli was brilliant. I don't think Martinelli got enough credit actually either yesterday.
I agree.
Him and Jorginho were both fantastic.
Now Manchester City are back in action against Brentford tonight. Pete Donaldson and Andy Brassel will be reacting to that game straight after full time. So keep an eye out for Ramble Reacts in your podcast apps. Now then, gentlemen, Newcastle United 4, Luton Town 4. 8 of the 26 goals in the Premier League on Saturday came in this game. It's the first 4-4 at St James's Park since Newcastle's comeback against Arsenal in 2011, which was on the 5th of Feb, exactly 12 years ago today.
Wow. And also spawned one of the greatest video memes of all time with that bloke getting really angry watching it back at his computer, which is always pleasing to watch. But this was an unbelievable game.
It was.
Incredible stuff, really.
Yeah.
I mean, look, for Luton to go behind and to go ahead like they did and then get pegged back, it's an incredible Barkley story. You know, it's a proper like roller coaster drama. Exactly. Mm. Ross Barkley and the Barkleys. But I think I just want to give a bit of credit to Luton. I know Newcastle are conceding goals like there's no tomorrow at the moment, and they don't really deserve their reputation as being kind of solid, because they're not solid. They haven't been for ages, particularly since kind of Christmas. But I said this at the start of the season. I think it's only fair that I kind of pull myself up on it. I said that Luton have got the lowest chance of any team in Premier League history of staying in the Premier League this season. Mm. I thought that then. If they stay up, I think I have to double down and say that it'll be the greatest performance from a promoted team, given where they were, since the Premier League's been around.
Big shout.
I know that's an arbitrary spot of like 1992 or whatever, but it just so happens the age we are, our kind of memories of football does start around that time.
The reason why they're not in the relegation zone is because Everton's points deduction. Now, Everton got those points deductions because they broke the rule, so it's not...
But I thought they'd be dead by then.
Yeah.
And they've got a game in hand as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, okay, so let's plus Everton 10 points. You know, they're still in touching distance of Forest, Brentford, Palace. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's still impressive stuff from Luton, and they've really, really found their feet in recent weeks. I mean, they've only lost one in the last six. They've won three.
Exactly, and that's what I was going to say. That particular stat is amazing. But given that size of squad, size of resources, wage budget, blah, 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 to lose one in six in January and February after a really busy festive period,
right,
and get yourself into a position, as you rightly say, Marcus, through nothing to do with Luton. Everton have had points deducted. They've got no say in it. But for them to pick up, you know, wins against, you know, Brighton 4-0 was an amazing win.
Score four goals in two games in a row is so, so impressive.
And to beat Sheffield United, because I mean, I know Sheffield United are very, very poor, but it's a fellow relegation threatened teams, so it's vital. And they also beat Newcastle at home as well, by the way.
Yeah, and look, you know, narrowly beaten by Chelsea as well.
That's a stain on their record.
Yeah, but narrowly beaten by Manchester City, narrowly beaten by Arsenal. You're going back into the start of December here.
So you know what narrowly beaten by them and narrowly beaten by them means? Narrowly relegated. That's what it means.
Well, what I'm getting at is, this is not a gimme. Well, they are not a side that you think, oh, we've got Luton today, that's fine, so we'll, we'll look, two, three, four goals to the, you know, a victory kind of thing. No, they give everybody a game, and that's really important, because look at Sheffield United, and we'll talk about them in a bit. How many times have they been shellacked this season? Yeah. Too many. Is like, for the fans, but not just for the players and everything, it's so depressing. If you've been absolutely walloped 5-0, you kind of go, whereas if you've just been pipped by Manchester City,
isn't it?
You've just been pipped by Arsenal, last minute goal. It's gutting, but you go, do you know what, lads? We went toe to toe with them. Yeah. Totally different feeling.
I'm sure, you know, a lot of Luton fans who saw them get promoted and obviously watched them far more closely than we do, possibly expected that they'd have a lot of fight and that they wouldn't be the whipping boys that everyone was predicting. But at the same time, I'm sure there's always a worry like that. If you're a smaller team coming up into the Premier League for the first time, you probably think you're going to have the season that Sheffield United are having, where you're losing all the time. There's very little to take from it. But it must be an absolute roller coaster supporting Luton at the moment. It must be brilliant.
Oh, it must be. And look, speaking as a fan who has come up to the Premier League, it's daunting. Mm. It is. You know, like, you think, oh, blimey, we're used to winning every week and it was great in the Championship, and now flipping it, oh yeah, we've got to face that team and that team and go away. Now, obviously, Fulham, you know, have been in the Premier League far more than Luton Town have over the years. But it took Luton, it didn't take them that long, really, to kind of start thinking, right, okay, let's be difficult to beat. Let's put our chances away. All these kind of old things. And as I say, four goals in back-to-back matches is amazing. Last time they did that, they were in League Two. Yeah, crying out loud.
That tells its own story.
It does. Rob Edwards said at full time, I felt sick at times. I felt elation. I felt nervous. But that's what football does to you.
That's what football do to you,
that's
baby.
That's what football do to you. And as well, again, they go down, they come back, and then they're ahead. The 4-2 ahead. Now, obviously, they might be disappointed that they gave that lead away, but there's still a bit of the game to go. You know, Kieran Trippier scores a lovely goal. As well, Harvey Barnes, you know, great to see him back. And again, scores a good goal. These are good goals against good players. I mean, Trippier is one of the best fullbacks in the league. Harvey Barnes, we know the quality that he has.
Yeah.
After his little blip. But the fact is, they then, you know, Newcastle have got the momentum. They're a better side than Luton. And they've got about 20 minutes, whatever, to score. Luton hold on for a point. You know, that's impressive as well.
Yeah.
Having thrown away the lead. Well, then leave there with something. Because if they lose that game 5-4, again, it's not 5-0, but you just think, ah, come on. So there we are.
I feel that they deserve a huge amount of credit, and you know what happens for the rest of the season remains to be seen. But on the Newcastle side, I just feel like I criticised them earlier, and I just looked at their recent record, and maybe it's not been as bad as I'm making out, but they just don't seem to be in control of games or anywhere near as solid as they have been under Howe before. And I know they've got players missing, like key players for long periods of time, you know, Pope and Tonali and Joel Linton and blah blah, but it just seems like it's a little bit unpredictable at the moment.
They've lost 10 games this season.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, which is the same as Everton, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, although perhaps that's slightly unfair, but it's, you know, if you look at the other sides in the top half, they've lost more games than anybody else. You know, you have to go down to Fulham in 13th to find a side who have lost one more than them. So yeah, it's been a funny old time for Newcastle. We know the injuries they've had and so on. But you know, I suppose from their point of view, having gone down, you know, they come back and they get something out of the game. Sad to see Anthony Gordon on crutches after the game. He's been such a big player for them, of course, this season. But great to see Harvey Barnes back. So,
Gordon.
Yeah.
Anthony Gordon.
Indeed. Before we go to break, there was also drama, of course, at Goodison Park on Saturday with Everton drawing 2-2 with Tottenham, thanks to that 94th minute equaliser from Jarrod Branthwaite.
Which is a confusing name to say, because most people who've got a name that looks like that are called Braithwaite.
Yes.
He's the only Branthwaite I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But it was actually a really good game. As Everton did so well to battle back into that. Over 25,000 people who bet on Spurs to win, though, still got paid out thanks to Betfair's Match Odds 90 market, something that we always talk about on a Friday. If there's a goal after 90 minutes that could affect your bet, you're still protected. And 25,000 people benefited from that because they bet on Spurs and it went into injury time until Everton equalised. So there you go.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Coming up in the second half, we've got Wolves scoring 4, Brighton scoring 4, and Neil
Stick
Warnock.
Around, Chelsea fans. It's going to be great. The water's warm.
Indeed it is. Not in Aberdeen, though, as Neil Warnock will find out. See you in a moment.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
And we're joined by the world's most famous soccer mom and her eldest son, Saint. Got some big news for us.
Yes, we are honored to be here to tell you that the U.S. will be playing its first World Cup 26 game here in Los Angeles. Right?
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. That was Kim Kardashian, by the way.
Always influencing the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The venues the fixtures have been divvied up for World Cup 2026. The final will be in New York.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Isn't it going to be in East Rutherford?
New York, New Jersey. So, yeah. I think that's how you... Yeah.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi territory. So
the drive in the credits of The Sopranos, basically. You're going to be in there
somewhere.
Yeah,
basically. It's in the tunnel. It's going to be in the tunnel.
Great. I'm glad, just because of the time difference. It's not as bad as the West Coast.
It's great for us for it to be on the East Coast, definitely.
It's not great. It's better.
It's much better.
Yeah.
Keep it in
Europe, for crying out loud, FIFA. I've told you this before.
Nothing good can happen if you branch out to new markets.
Oh, look, I would have settled on Mexico City.
Do you want a little...
But they've got the opening game, apparently.
They have. Absolutely.
That's a lovely way to start. Mexico City.
As Jim always says, they're the most World Cup country
absolutely.
Ever. But can I just point out, I might have told you guys this before, but I haven't told our listeners, when the World Cup was in the USA in 1994, my father-in-law was the personal chef for the Italian team.
That's right.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah. And he got a load of souvenirs and merch and memorabilia afterwards. From the Italian team personally to thank him. Mm-hmm. And
threw
when they
away.
Moved house, he chucked it all out because he's like, no one cares about football.
Chucked it all
I know.
Out. It's a shame.
I know. And he now knows the error of his ways.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad you're doing that. Well, we should say thanks to a friend of the Ramble, Ryan, for choosing that clip. You can become a friend of the Ramble too by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble, as well as getting every single episode of the Football Ramble on the content upfront completely ad-free. You'll also have access to the Football Ramble Discord, where tributes were pouring in for Marouane Fellaini on Saturday after he retired.
Yeah, the tributes were mixed, which is probably quite similar to how Marouane...
Oh, come on.
Did you see Jose Mourinho's tribute?
Well...
Jose Mourinho was full of glowing praise on his Instagram for Marouane Fellaini. He did like 3 or 4 photos talking about how he gave everything on the pitch, and he said, now, Marouane, get yourself off and give your ankles a rest, is what he said.
Who's he trying to mug off with that?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's always an alternate...
What he said to Marouane Fellaini is that you're a great player for me, you gave everything, but your body let you down, and therefore you let me down.
You and I were both too good for Manchester United.
And that's why we're going back. Get in the drop top. We're driving back up. To Manchester. Yeah,
you're either with me or against me.
Oi, Marouane, jump in the car. We're going on the secret special surprise trip. Where are we going? Stone Roses on the radio. See you in a minute.
Or perhaps no, you wouldn't have Liam Gallagher and John Squire. Too much Man City involved.
Yeah, definitely.
But I would. Chelsea 2, Wolverhampton Wanderers 4. Chelsea have conceded 4 goals in successive league games for the first time since 1989. The opposite to Luton Town, of course.
Yeah.
Conceding rather than scoring. A stunning result.
It is
at Stamford Bridge.
A stunning result. And it was also a really interesting clash between two teams who had disappointing results and really sort of to a point performances in their previous matches. And so both had to sort of stop the rot a little bit. And obviously only Wolves managed to do that. It's really interesting to me that Pochettino was sort of essentially getting ahead of speculation about his job in the post-match, talking about how he knows he's not necessarily safe if results continue this way. And it's really... it shouldn't be surprising from Chelsea given how inconsistent they've been, but they were starting to put a little run of wins together. Mm. And this has been the problem with them, isn't it? They don't seem to be able to keep any kind of foundations having any solidity.
Yeah, well, I mean, Pochettino said that you know, they're not good enough sort of thing, me included, he said, which I find this quite, I don't know whether he's trying to own his own narrative or not, but he does seem to be aware, as we all, I mean, obviously he's more aware than any of us, you know, he is the manager, for crying out loud, but the sounds he's making, it's, you know, the lemons have gone sour, and
yeah,
well, the lemons take 2 years though, don't they?
Do they?
Yeah. Is that what
he's
suddenly...
He's got a fucking couple of lemons in midfield, I'll tell you that.
But he's concerned about his job.
Of course he is. And I think the reason that he's getting ahead of that speculation and mentioning it himself is essentially him going, look, I know what you're going to say, so don't bother. I'll answer your questions now. Let's move on to something and just deflect it that way.
Do you know what I'd have said if I was in the media doing that? I said, no, you don't get to choose that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is our time.
Yeah.
We pay for access here.
Yeah. I'm not clattering on.
So when you're sacked, what's your first meal going to be?
Yeah. I don't come up to you and say, yeah, another tactic. No. I'll ask the questions that I want to ask as a broadcaster or a journalist. Thank you very much. I just think
it, why are you not in the press room, Morsey? You sat here with us.
I'm too frightened.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm safe in here with you guys to protect me.
Okay.
I just think that if you look at the story of Chelsea as a football team, they've burnished and built their reputation in recent years, as we know, through what's happened with the money they've got from Roman Abramovich and the money they continue to get from Todd Boehly. They are a team that the fans would say, some of the more obnoxious fans would say, you know, talk about your history all you want. We're making history now, right? You're still making history now. Not the kind of history you want to be making, because if that is your identity, if your identity of the last 15, 20 years is we go out there, we just buy players, and then we get success, and you put two players at the base of midfield who cost over £100 million each, and you lose by 4-2 at home to Wolves, you're going to be mocked and you're going to be laughed at, and it should be way, way, way better than this. Now, I understand...
In the interest of balance, they have produced some players over the years,
who?
To be fair. Mason Mount.
Good one.
Right, well, it was Paul Portsmouth, actually.
Yeah,
I suppose.
He's from that.
Reece James, there you go.
They have produced some,
yeah,
but they've certainly not produced some in the same level of numbers that, say, a Man City have, or even one or two other clubs.
Okay.
So,
I'm just trying to protect you on Twitter, that's all.
I don't need protection on Twitter. Okay. I don't read it.
Right.
I hit send and I'll close it down.
What about X?
that's good. Some good stuff on there.
Yeah, true.
I understand that Wolves were beneficiaries of a couple of, you know, really kind of difficult deflected goals that you can't really do anything about, and Pochettino's probably thinking, Jesus, well, what have I got to do to get a break here? You know, I'm not a very lucky general at the moment, but it's just nowhere near good enough. Like, he's under pressure for his job, and rightly so.
I mean, they're 11th in the league. You know, we thought it was going to click,
and they're nowhere near it.
And you wonder, will it ever click? That's the question that those who are making the decisions at Chelsea Football Club need to really address.
Do you mean, will it ever click under Pochettino?
Of course,
or do you mean as the sort of Boehly regime and this approach to...
Well, I mean, I suppose that's the bigger thing, but I was talking about Pochettino, yeah.
Sure. Because the whole thing, though, isn't it? Because what... Tell me now, honestly, if they do make a decision to get rid of Pochettino, which is obviously their right... Do you have any confidence at all that the next decision they make will be a good decision?
No, I
it
don't.
Won't be.
I don't. And it's not too dissimilar to Manchester United. Now, I know Manchester United are higher up in the table than them. Well, I mean, Chelsea are in a League Cup final, so there is a little something. And if they do win that, it is a trophy. But I don't think... I think that would perhaps paper over the cracks. It's just disjointed. It's all over the place. The difference between Manchester United and Chelsea is Manchester United, let's be honest, they're still suffering post-Ferguson. I know that sounds ridiculous because it was years ago now he left. But they still, they have that sort of modern history where...
But they also have problems at sort of board level, don't they, and with the structuring of the club. That is a hangover from one man doing so much as he did.
Exactly. They've got all that. Chelsea, as you were alluding to there, Luke, and I agreed with your points, is they've always been this side. Oh, we get a new manager in, bang, and they just Chelsea Football Club just keep on going.
They look like... But the difference is now, they look like... When they used to do that, they had so many core senior players that could essentially do a lot of the hard work on the pitch. You know, you think of the big characters like Terry and Cech and Lampard and Drogba, and they'd have managers who come through who, to be fair to them, haven't never really done anything anywhere else. Di Matteo, Avram Grant, and they would still have success, right? They can't do that now because they look like they meet in the fucking car park before the game every week.
There is that. And it seems a long while ago, even though it wasn't a long while ago, it does now, that when Thomas Tuchel won the Champions League there. And, you know, I think, again, that those kind of things make people think, oh, well, it's Chelsea. It will come good at some point. But sometimes, actually, you run out of track. And I just think, again, with Graham Potter, is Graham Potter a guy who can take a big football club and do something with them? Well, we don't know, because I don't think we should judge him on Chelsea.
No. He's still getting paid by Chelsea, by the way, so he's having a lovely old time.
Oh, I'd have thought so, yeah. and Pochettino will be in about 10 years' time, I'd imagine, whether he's there for much longer or not. But with Pochettino, his track record is an interesting one. It's perhaps maybe not as impressive as some people say. Again, there's a few jury members that are still out on him. What he did at Spurs was very impressive. Elsewhere, okay, Southampton was good, but again, it's a little while ago now. And when I said earlier there, oh, it's not clicked, I think I've fallen in for that trap as well, that, oh, well, at some point it clicks and then Chelsea are back on track. It clicks and Manchester. Actually, it's ebb and flows.
Talking about the game itself, you know, understand that, as I said, Wolves were beneficiaries of a couple of, you know, quite fortunate goals. And
again, making their own luck, though.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's not get into that again, Jim, because this is a bit complicated.
No, but I think essentially Chelsea are still giving away, they're still vulnerable in their own box if they were in this position, is what I mean.
And I think what I find particularly interesting about that is that, you know, you've got, so look at the centre back pairing, like De Sarsi and Thiago Silva, right? De Sarsi's not had a very good season. He might just be fine on his feet. He's not a young player, but he's new to the Premier League, so he's fine on his feet. He's alongside Thiago Silva, who's one of the most decorated and impressive central defenders we've ever seen. He's brilliant at so much stuff, even now at 39. But he's 39, right? Yeah. So if you are a £100 million midfield player playing at the base of midfield, uh-huh, alongside your mate, who's also a £100 million midfield player playing at the base of midfield, why don't you not leave him exposed against Pedro Neto? Because that is a fucking bloodbath. Neto will run all day, every day. And the amount of times you saw him matching up one-on-one with Thiago Silva when you've got a centre-back next to Thiago Silva who's not really having a great time of it either. It just seems like, for the level of club they're at and for the level of reputation that Pochettino has, it should be much, much better than that.
I totally agree with that. But it's interesting that you, when you highlight Thiago Silva, you were blaming the centre-halves, because Thiago Silva's wife thought differently. She took to X.
She's got a lot
game.
Of thoughts.
She does.
She's great.
And the reason why we know that is because
she's a herald of disaster.
Yeah.
She often starts piping up.
Yeah, she often tells us what her thoughts are on X, of course.
She'd have Thiago Silva as the manager.
Well, she hasn't come out and said that yet. She appeared to call for Pochettino, but she actually said, it's time to change. I'll decide.
Imagine that.
It's time to change.
Imagine we were having a chat about the Ramble and one of our wives just piped up publicly, I mean, you got to get rid of Luke. He's got to go.
She would never say that publicly. if you wait any longer, it will be too late.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What, you finished
12? Sounds like a threat.
Oh dear, Wolves fans were chanting, you're going to get sacked in the morning. I don't know whether this is relevant, but Jose Mourinho has been mentioned.
And that's why it's... Oh, come on.
The rumblings are there, aren't they?
I think we deserve
it. We are often doing those rumblings ourselves.
We deserve it, Jim.
We do deserve it.
We should be getting a little kickback from George Mensch. Shouldn't we? Because we mench his client enough. Like, do you know what I mean?
Our show is brilliant all the time, right?
Yeah.
We work really hard at it. We do it for 16 years.
And we've never been wrong before.
Been wrong before.
Yeah.
You've got some of these other football podcasts. You
haven't been chop and change with Chelsea. That,
they change all their hosts. We deserve this. Mourinho needs to come back to the Premier League at Chelsea. We fucking deserve it, guys.
Would you rather Chelsea's best fan, the guy that did that song, he said very clearly at the end of that song, we'd love to have you back one day,
Jose. Welcome back anytime, Jose.
Anytime.
And he does speak for all Chelsea fans, that guy, yeah.
What would you rather, Mourinho back at Man United or Chelsea?
I think Chelsea's funnier.
I don't know. I think I'd choose Man U, I reckon.
I'm happy with either.
We're just watching.
Yeah, I'm just watching. Yeah.
Well, anyway, if there's any justice for us, then that will happen.
But Wolves were great. And
Wolves
were
brilliant.
They deserve all the credit in the world.
And Matheus Cunha scored a hat-trick. And my goodness, what a wonderful time he had at Stamford Bridge. He's only the fourth visiting player to score a Premier League hat-trick at Stamford Bridge. Jim, you'll certainly remember at least one of them.
Robin van Persie?
Two of them.
The other one was Kanu, wasn't it?
Nwankwo Kanu.
Yeah.
Well, ah, right. Yeah. God, yeah.
That third goal.
Again, your memory is way better than mine.
The third goal from a really acute angle.
To be fair, how is Jim possibly, you know, how is he meant to remember that?
Exactly.
You know?
True. In the late 1800s. Right?
Yeah. You were a teenager. Yeah. Sergio Aguero is the other one. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Very much in the Premier League, I should say.
So he's in good company then.
He's in great company and he deserves to be, because his performance was just fantastic. And we've said it before with Wolves. Going forward, they look so dynamic, don't they? They look like a side who, if you're a defender against them, you're thinking, this lot are difficult to mark.
Yes. Well, Cunha is really direct. We know that. We've been saying that all season about his direct running. That's what we've been known for when he came in from Atletico. But Neto is as well.
Yeah.
And it's
there's something really beautifully straightforward about that. That is going to ask questions of your defence.
It's so underrated as a thing for a player. You get players who are just ridiculously positive. Like Trossard's like that.
Yeah.
Trossard was able to do what he did yesterday because of that. He came off the bench with a really positive attitude, said, right, I'm not going to sit in and protect this lead. I'm going to really push. And Neto always does that. Chiesa always does that. Like he's just. Yeah. I just think he's.
Luis Suarez was the master of it.
Suarez
he would
was
run
great for
at
it, yeah.
you. Ask yeah, you that question,
and there's a lot to credit that type of positivity. It can make a real difference, particularly when teams are particularly fragile or not that confident or having a bad day of it. I thought he was very, very good.
With
yeah.
Hwang Hee-chan to come back as well. Mm. It's Gag O'Neill. Mm. What a job!
Well, yeah, I mean, he was properly celebrating after, which was great right, to see. I love the fact that Craig Dawson's in there.
Yeah.
That sort of old head. I like that at Wolves, basically because of Connor Cody, that sort of older, sort of slightly older statesman of the game at the yeah. back, just to kind of make sure it's all going.
Like Thiago Silva.
I mean, sometimes you could be too old, I'd say. but they're a lovely side to watch, Wolves, at the moment. I'm really glad for old Gag O'Neill. The goals are coming as well. They're climbing up the table. They're in 10th. And I think I think a top half finish would be a feather in the cap for him.
Definitely.
Because, again, not a given, and we remember at the start of the season there were big concerns, when he first went in there as well. So, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, Wolves. And and one day, Gary O'Neill, you will be on the throne.
What is the throne, though?
England manager.
Wow, what a shout by you, that is.
I'm telling you.
We've got so many coaches now. We never used to have any, did we?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have so many.
Is it disrespectful to say that kind of thing on Sven's birthday?
No.
Is it what Sven wants?
I said one day. I won't say I'll go back in time and rub Sven's name out. No, I'll put your name there.
I don't think you should be saying other England managers' names right. on Sven's birthday.
That
was your rule, by the way, not mine.
I think Sven's about sharing the love, isn't he?
It's true, yeah, absolutely. He is, yeah.
I think that's a very fair point.
Yeah.
One we should
too
move
much
on
love
from.
Sometimes.
One we should move
He's
on
got too
from.
Much love to give.
Oi, Brighton 4, Palace 1.
Yeah. Speaking of ex-England managers, speaking of ex-Palace managers, probably by the time this show comes out.
Oh dear!
Yeah,
brilliant win for Brighton. Brilliant
Amazing.
Brighton, yeah. That's I mean they you know in that derby.
Nice prediction by me as well. Let's not forget that.
Well done.
Their record against Palace isn't that good actually. Brighton's.
Yeah, hence I said well done.
Thank you very much.
They're up to eighth in the league. Yeah, I mean that's just a lovely victory, beating a rival so handedly as well with everybody getting involved. Lewis Dunk in the third minute.
It's a great start.
Hey, big Dunky.
Especially, I mean, Lewis Dunk is sort of Brighton born, isn't he? And this rivalry is very fervent, as we know. So that's an extra. I think Hinchelwood's from Brighton as well, isn't he? So that's doubly enjoyable for the Seagulls.
He's showing a lot of promise as well, we should say.
The Lewis Dunk is a great lens with which to view how good a coach Roberto De Zerbi is, because if you look at the stats about most touches in the Premier League for players this season, last season, Lewis Dunk's normally in the top three. Mm. And he's basically a 32-year-old centre-back, which just goes to show you. Because you think it'd be De Bruyne or some like Jorginho, if he played every game, just gets a lot of touch on the ball. Dunk is always in there.
Dunk's turned him into Alessandro Nesta.
Yes.
Dunk, you're right. I mean, basically, he's now knocking on England's door. Yeah. You know, he's played, and that is because he's gone with the coaching of De Zerbi. You know, again, we spoke on the mailbag on Saturday, the importance of a manager, is it overblown? Mm. Well, there you see for individual players the tunes that you
and
can get out of them.
De Zerbi would have put an absolute rocket up them after that Luton game. So it was a difficult time to play them, but I just thought that Hodgson compounded the disappointment with that Michael Olise decision. I thought that was a decision made out of desperation. Yeah. I don't think he was no way he's making that decision if he's not under that amount of pressure for his job. It backfired badly. And then he kind of...
Do you put it all out on Hodgson? I mean, the medical staff said he was ready.
Yeah,
he said that.
I love that Roy's now throwing the medical staff.
Well, this is the thing.
Rather than the young players.
You guys had a discussion about Hodgson before we came on, which I'm sure you'll replicate now. But I don't know if that's fair to label it on Hodgson, but ultimately, just to throw back the same way you just did about Saturday's show, we all agreed on Saturday the manager sets the tone, sets the standard, takes the responsibility, he's the guy. I don't think it's right that he publicly says they told me that he would be fine. You've got to take the responsibility. It's a joint decision as a manager, I think.
Okay.
I just don't think he makes that decision anyway if he's not under pressure.
Yeah. It's symptomatic of a man who knows he's not going to be in the job for very long. I mean, there have been reports that Steve Parrish has been looking for a replacement for for weeks now. And obviously they don't come from nowhere, but it's very difficult for them to find anyone to come in.
There's big talk that Roy Hodgson's being linked with the job.
I think as well, another thing we have to take into account is this is a 3pm kickoff and Roy is mostly nocturnal.
It's true. We haven't mentioned that.
He's probably exhausted when giving those team talks.
He looks exhausted.
He absolutely does. Yeah. But again, on a more serious point, they're now facing, like, Ezra, Elise and Mark Gahey are now facing periods out as well. So if you are a new manager coming in, you're thinking, how likely is it that Everton are going to get dock points again? Because if that happens, maybe I'll take this job and it'll be fine.
That would be big for
Danny Murphy told me that he thinks Rufus Zaha should get the job.
Yeah?
Joachim Anderson had to be pulled away from the Palace fans after confrontation at full-time. It's all going wrong, isn't
it?
Is that wrong, though?
He's going wrong, and hence that is symptomatic of it, of it going wrong, that they're having arguments. Although, I mean, they've lost two in their last four. They've also won two in the last four. You know, I mean, that Palace fans might go, shut up. But and I understand that. But I'm saying that...
I'd love that as a patron benefit. They just get to ring in and just go to you, shut up.
You can get a number, which I will answer.
Okay, it's the manner of it, though, isn't it? It's the manner of how listless they are and how easy they are to play against. That's the problem. That's no team can accept that. No set of fans can accept that.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the moment you would say with Palace that they're relying on other teams to be crap.
Yes.
I don't personally mind if because players are unquestionably trying their best. Look at what happens to players all week. They train, they gear up towards the game, they're focused, they do everything they can. They get beaten by a better side away from home. It's a derby game. Tempers run high. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. I've said this before, for Anderson or whoever anyone is, as long as it's channeled in the right way, to actually kind of go, well, do you know fucking what?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up, because this is harder for me than it is for you. I've worked my bollocks off all week trying to get this out, and it's not working. I don't particularly like the dynamic where fans can give whatever stick they want to
players. I do agree with that,
sometimes even as far as throwing things at them and abusing them and in horrific ways. And the moment a player goes back towards the fans, everyone hand rings and goes, isn't that horrible? It's like, well, this is the real world we're in. Things have consequences and actions have reactions.
Yeah, I think that thing about the players aren't trying. Just sometimes, we've all been on the pitch at various levels. We've all been in various, when you think, it's just not happening. It's just we're in a rut here. And look, it's a league format. Not every team can be playing really well. I know that sounds...
No, you're right. And it may well be it's run its course with Roy Hodgson, so they basically need to bring in someone like Roy Hodgson to sort it out.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Well, look, it could be worse. Crystal Palace, you could be Sheffield United.
It can always be worse.
God, speaking of easy to play against.
Bloody Nora.
Goal difference of minus 40 now in February.
I mean, Aston Villa 4-0 up at half-time. Sheffield United have now conceded 5 goals in a single game on 5 occasions this season in all competitions.
Just like... really gutted for them at this point. It's like they're not going to quite be as bad as Derby were, I don't think, but if you
know, Derby
it was terrible, wasn't it?
That is a lovely bit of cold comfort for them,
isn't it? But I mean, you've got fans leaving the ground after about half an hour when Villa go 3-0 up and stuff like that, and you can understand that. It was obviously you're sad for the Sheffield United players to see so many people just sort of not wanting to be involved in what's going to be another horrible afternoon, but football's a really emotional game, isn't it? When you're in the stands and you're seeing your team lose, it hurts you, and I completely understand why they might have made that decision. And I just have so much sympathy for.
Well, spare a thought for the Villa fans. They enjoyed it.
They had a lovely time. Yeah. A friend of mine was there in the Sheffield United end.
Oh, all right. As a Villa fan.
You heard from
as a
him?
Villa fan. I have, yeah. Well, yeah. He's very quiet on the day, but.
Well, after about half an hour, he could presumably celebrate because there was no one around him. Douglas Luiz did a lovely pass. Did you, my God.
Ridiculous. That's pass of the season.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Ollie Watkins became the first player to reach 10 plus goals and assists in the Prem this season, and that's the real quiz.
He's been brilliant. He's been really, really good.
Took his goal well. I mean, Villa. Have they brought themselves back into the title race? Because they are 5 points off the top. Obviously, Man City have 2 games in hand. I mean, so if Man City win those 2 games, they'll be 6 points behind.
They're not going to win the Premier League. If they get into the top 4, that'd be massive.
You said this about Leicester before.
Yeah, okay. So,
when we were all, everyone else was saying it.
If I walk outside every night and go, there's not going to be a comet tonight, and after 35 years, a comet appears, doesn't make me wrong, does it?
I have it on good authority that you weren't backing Blackburn in the 90s as well, mate. So, hang on, if you said there's not going to be a comet tonight and then there is, it does make you wrong.
Yeah, but not... Okay, you can be wrong one day in 6,000 days.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's going to be another one, dear, and it's going to be Aston Villa.
I'm saying that... My question is, are they out of the title race?
My answer is, yes, they are.
Jim?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I like the romantic side of you that wants to believe. You want to believe, and I think you should be credited for that.
You want everyone on the verge.
Yeah.
I want everyone on the verge. I think they are on the verge. They've got to be on the verge, haven't they?
I think they're... here's what I think. I think they are in a straight shootout with Spurs for that top four berth.
Mm.
And if they can get into that fourth place, I think that's an amazing feather in Unai Emery's cap and an amazing feather in Aston Villa's cap.
Yeah.
See them in the Champions League would be great.
And I think if Unai Emery came here for a shootout, he'd be very happy with that.
And if anything... Listen, Marcus, if they get anything more than that, like they accidentally win the title, it's a bonus.
It is a bonus, yeah. Very much. That's how Ranieri was playing by the way.
Like Andy saying that like Newcastle United and Eddie Howe are absolutely fine because they got into the Champions League ahead of time, so everything's fine now. Yeah. It's not fine. They're ninth. They can't stop losing games.
You can't dine out on that.
No, you can't.
After the fourth season. We're in League Two now, Eddie. Yeah, yeah, but that Champions League campaign.
Yeah.
But what about Chris Wilder? You would think his job was safe despite the results because it would just be ridiculous. If
I mean, the same way that Alan Partridge thought his job was safe at the BBC.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because he's having a meltdown, basically.
Well, he's also being investigated by the FA for accusing officials of discriminating against his team. The accusation, of course, came during that same round when he took issue with the assistant referee in a sandwich while talking to him.
So here's the story to break it down for people who aren't sad enough to watch football as closely as we are, right? Mm. Which is basically everyone. There's no context as to when he was eating the sandwich.
Yeah.
Like, if it was...
I think he went to see him in the dressing room after.
But no, but in the interview, he gives the impression that it was during the game.
Yeah, like he'd probably done the touchline with it or something.
Which would have been amazing.
But if he goes to a meeting and the guy's like, I'm having a meeting and I'm just getting my lunch down me because, you know, I'm busy. Mm. Is that disrespectful or is that just, you know, come on, we've got to do stuff?
Well, you shouldn't talk with your mouth full.
True.
So on the basis of that...
He's probably just listening based on what I know about Chris Wilder, though, isn't he? Mm. And the second thing is, you simply, regardless of what you think of Sheffield United, regardless of what you think of Chris Wilder and anything else to do with
sandwiches.
Football or sandwiches, you cannot say during the season, in the build-up to a game, I was told by a Premier League referee who I've known for a long time, who's as honest as a day is long, get ready because every tight decision will go against you today. You can't say that. Like, let's agree on that at least.
Yeah.
He said every 50-50 decision will go against you. We had two bookings in the first half of the game, but they weren't even bookings. It was just a coming together. Like, you're essentially undermining things over and over again. Yeah. And then everyone's hand-wringing when Premier League referees get abused. You can't do that.
It's a conspiracy theory, isn't it?
It's basically
We're seeing more and more of this kind of... this speculation being legitimised.
It's a shame when the managers get involved. Anyway,
absolutely.
Let's move on from pompous Sheffield United managers who have a go at officials and say ridiculous things.
I see what you're doing.
And sometimes get in trouble for what they say. Neil Warnock is set to be unveiled as Aberdeen manager this week. Come on. Bloody come on.
Yeah.
I applied for the Aberdeen job once and didn't get a reply, which I thought was real bad manners. I love that. That was before they had email as well, Neil. So, maybe the letters didn't go as far as Aberdeen to Newquay. I don't know if you were living there at the time.
He also said that he had a player up there once who said it's the only place he knows where seagulls never land because it's that cold. If they landed, they'd never get up again.
He's already playing the hits.
There was talk that Jack Wilshere was being linked with this job as well, and I just think to yourself, imagine being like a chairman or an owner of like a big club. Aberdeen are a big club, you know, European honours and all the rest of it, and you're sitting there and it's like that Homer Simpson meme where you've got one button there and the other button there and one's Neil Warnock and the other's Jack Wilshere. You're probably thinking, how did I get here? How did I get to this point?
I think Jack Wilshere actually might have pitched for the job.
I think he's
quite sort of ambitious, but also realistic, let's be honest, which is, I'm impressed by that. And good luck.
I'm not criticising him at all. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, it just seems a little bit strange.
I didn't picture him as a manager.
No.
I think.
But he clearly wants to stay in the game and obviously feels like he's got unfinished business, isn't he?
I would just probably...
A bit like Neil Warnock.
There is... Aberdeen were in Europe 6 weeks ago. now they're staring on the barrel of Neil Warnock or Jack Wilshere, is what I'm saying.
Do you think that's what Warnock did? Yeah. I'll wait till you're out of the bloody thing.
Yeah, better off out of it.
I don't want
he
could be managing them against Rangers tomorrow night. Neil Warnock.
First game is Rangers, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was it recently or he said before, oh, I love Rangers, I love Ali McCoist and all that sort of stuff. Can you imagine him on the touchline at Ibrox? It's brilliant.
See if he can get a senior citizen's train ticket sorted out of time to get up there.
Well, yeah, we're taking the train, lads.
There's it can't be a longer journey than that in the country than Newquay to Aberdeen.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
I mean, it's absolutely a remarkable affair.
I should have checked, actually, but we know that there was a flight route that opened up from Newquay to Middlesbrough when he was Middlesbrough boss.
Yeah.
Just because they said, oh, Warnock will give us
might
a bit
of business. Might as well take it, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's an option.
Aberdeen had that incredible game against that Finnish side, HJK, earlier in the season. I remember we talked about it. It was.
And they also had a handy draw against Celtic.
It was about -400.
Yeah.
And they had to keep stopping the game to get the Zamboni on to get the snow off the pitch. It was one of the most Neil Warnock games I've ever seen. So it does fit.
Indeed. But he will be interim manager, we should say. Yeah. Until he's made permanent, everybody. It's great. I'm so glad Aberdeen had done this.
It's great. It is
and
great.
By the way, I think this is a rare one. What's good for Aberdeen is actually good for us as well. I think it's a good appointment.
Yeah.
Obviously.
You're basically referencing the chance that Mourinho might go back to Chelsea there. I mean, would that be bad for Chelsea, Mourinho going there?
I hope so.
You know it
what?
Might not be.
Look, if you look at the situation they're in, yeah. A siege mentality wouldn't be the worst thing, would it? People talk about how Jose Mourinho's standards have fallen. Chelsea's have fallen in line with that.
Yeah.
It's not actually as mad as it might sound
at
first.
And it's a fit. It's a fit because, you know, Mourinho and United isn't a fit. Mourinho and Chelsea is a fit.
Yeah,
I'm not going to put too fine a point on that.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And the fans would, I assume the fans would welcome Mourinho back just for old time's sake. Can't imagine that.
I think even if
which is why I think it'd be funny if you were to make
even if you sat there as a Chelsea fan thinking Mourinho coming back would be a bad appointment, would be silly for X, Y, and Z reason. I think the day he came back, you'd be like, fuck it,
let's do it again.
You couldn't help but love it.
It's like when you've been on a diet for 6 months, and you just smash into a big
Domino's.
Mac. I think Mourinho at Aberdeen will be good. He's far enough away, but we've got our eye on him.
Mourinho at Aberdeen.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Okay, fine.
That'd be fitting really nicely. Yeah.
Well, we should finish with a quick line on the current longest serving manager of one football club in world football will be stepping down at the end of the season. Stephen Baxter of Crusaders in Northern Ireland has been in charge since 2005.
Wow.
When Mourinho went to Chelsea first, of course. How
incredible.
About that? Yeah,
it makes you feel old, doesn't it?
Mourinho was first at Chelsea. Sven was England manager. Arctic Monkeys had just burst onto the scene. That's when he first started at Crusaders. He's won league titles. He's won cups.
He's managed for over 900 games.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's three Irish league titles, four Irish cups, one Setanta Sports Cup, one League Cup, and three County Antrim Shield successes.
And a couple of those cups have been recent. I think last season did they win the cup? So it's been it's not like all at the start, and then you know it's not an Arsene Wenger.
If you've picked up three County Antrim Shields. You deserve to be a household name.
Statue.
Absolutely.
There we are, everybody.
Good on that. It's an amazing achievement.
It is.
It
absolutely is. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Pete and Andy will be back tonight for Ramble Reacts following Brentford versus Manchester City. Of course, do follow us on Twitter, currently known as X, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram at Football Ramble, and subscribe to us on Spotify. Thank you, Luke.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.